Thanks so much. Was that everyone's going to the moon?
I don't want to live on the moon.
I don't want to live on the moon. Okay. I couldn't remember the name of that one. That's beautiful. You haven't heard it in years. Never heard it in a church before. Never did. Or a congregation, worshiping congregation. Oh, yeah. Things that make us uncomfortable are always a rich source of humor. And few things make us more uncomfortable than having someone, or usually some two people, occasionally some four or five people, show up at our front door and offer us an opportunity to change our religion, to change from ours to theirs, that is. Here are a few of the many comic responses that people have come up with to help deal with the stress of such a situation. The first is a suggestion. Here we go. Answer the door naked. And carrying weaponry. This is the American way, after all, of problem solving. This is supposed to guarantee immediate results, and I imagine that it would work. The next one would take longer, but should prove just as effective. Pretend to be the slowest talking person in the world and see how long your spirit of Christian charity lasts. The next one should also work. Excuse yourself from the door for a moment and do not come back. The problem is that if it didn't work, you could find yourself stuck with some very cold and frustrated evangelists still huddling there when you go off to work the next morning. But here are a few more suggestions. Answer every one of their questions with, "What do you mean by that?" This might take a while, but you and your loved ones can have fun placing bets on how long it takes them to get flustered and leave. Or pick an oft-repeated word in their vocabulary. God, Jesus, heaven, it, the, etc. And giggle whenever they utter it. If they ask you what's going on, say nothing. Why? In very even tones, and then giggle again. Or instead of giggling, say beep at every cue word. This next one could be adapted for secular phone solicitors as well. Tell them that you're busy at the moment and ask them if they will give you their home phone number so you can call them back. When they explain that they cannot give their home phone number, you say, "I guess you don't want anyone bothering you at home, right?" They will agree, and you say, "Now you know how I feel," and close the door. Well, for now, let's open our hearts as Matt plays. Joke on Sunday morning when it's time for serious stuff. I don't know. I don't want to cause a shock to your systems by transitioning too quickly from jokes about missionaries to serious talk about our own mission. So here's a couple more jokes. You can tell that I'm getting down to serious religious business now because I'm going to start to name names. Why are there no Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons in heaven? It's not that they don't deserve it. It's because whenever they show up at the pearly gates, God pulls St. Peter under his desk and says, "Shh, pretend we're not in." And finally, one that you might have heard already, maybe on a public radio station show like Prairie Home Companion. What do you get when you cross a Mormon with a Unitarian Universalist? Someone who knocks on your door for no particular reason. So what do you actually do when folks like this show up at your home, all full of smiles and sunshine? Would you like to share a little bit of your strategy for the benefit of the rest of us?
I can tell you what my dad did.
What'd your dad do?
He said, I will time you. You can tell me anything you want about what you believe, and then I will give you back that same amount of time telling you how I see the world.
Ooh, I love it. Even Stephen. Oh, even Stephen. Nice.
I just let him in, and if I feel like I don't have much time, I tell him I only have about 10 minutes. But they're always very nice people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I tell him that I'm very happy with my own church.
Yeah.
But we could talk for a few.
Yeah, how nice. I like the limits that both of you have. Yeah, Paul.
Well, they don't come knocking on my door, but I find them when I'm commuting to work. And so I pulled the universalist trick. I asked them, how do you know God's love? And that kind of stops it.
Right, right. You got to kind of put it, sending it, putting it right back to them. Yeah, Catherine.
I actually did answer the door naked. Reason for anybody to ever come up that road. And so when my kids were with their dad for the summer, I didn't wear any clothes.
This was in Mexico, or was this around here? Got a, I said, was this in Mexico or here?
No, here.
Oh, here.
In Douglas County.
All right. A tough hide of a former forest ranger, for sure. Well, I once came unintentionally close to doing the same thing, to enacting that very first option one morning. Answer the door naked and carrying weaponry. When my wife and I were graduate students, we lived near a Jehovah's Kingdom Hall, and I guess that our block was used for training witnesses. So many came that I finally prepared my own religious tract so that I could hand mine to them just before they could give me theirs. One morning, the doorbell rang when I'd just gotten out of the shower, so I bounded to the door wearing only a towel. Looking like a wet Charles Manson with my long hair and my dripping beard, I bent down to get one of my tracts from behind the door and said, "Wait, I've got something for you." While Pam stood behind me. She told me later that they had frozen with terror, probably thinking that I was going for a gun. I laughed at that, but I wasn't really pleased. I'd only wanted to confront this practice of two or more people ganging up on what's usually only one. Two people who are all warmed up, getting the jump on someone who's not. And that seems a little bit like bullying, but I don't mean to bully back. They came prepared to invade my religious space, and I prepared a response. I'll tell you more about that sometime. That's a fun story. But nowadays, when such folk come to my door, I usually say something like, "Sorry, I'm a minister of another faith tradition, and I need to get back to work on my sermon." And that, plus the white beard, usually does the trick as well as those wild Charles Manson looks and my elaborate tract ever did. Probably better. And answer the door naked and carrying weaponry. If my homemade tract was anything like a weapon, it was purely defensive, I swear it. It was not something that I would ever dream of taking to other people's doorsteps in a missionary way. I'd feel really naked doing that. And maybe that's why so many people have adopted a uniform of sorts. White shirts with black ties and name badges that identify a fresh-faced kid as an elder, as if he had the longest, whitest beard of all. Sharp clothes and leather briefcases that make folks with a high school education or less, or much less, look like doctors or lawyers or professors, people with a really serious job to do. And they are serious about certain religious ideas and stories and experiences, but it's not enough for them and their fellow church, that they and their fellow church members feel it. They want you to feel it too. They need you to feel it, accept it, and believe it, just like they do. Like your life depends on it. Well, if you were going to go from door to door to share the liberal message of our congregation, what would you wear? Well, one good historical choice might be to dress like Thomas Jefferson. those cool revolutionary era clothes have a nifty sort of unisex look with the kind of the legging things and the tri-corner hat and the ruffle, you know, the ruffled collars. It'd be kind of cool. But wasn't Jefferson extremely cautious about any one religious view holding sway in the new country that he'd helped to design? Wasn't he the one who wrote some famous words about that? Believing that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should, quote, make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Now, people will deny that he said it. Right, that's right there. Those are Jefferson's words as applied to any attempt to force Americans to adopt the opinions, practices, or beliefs of one religious system set above all others. But was it possible for any religious principles to be so compelling in their own right that everybody would simply adopt them on their own? Let me share some less well-known words of Thomas Jefferson's. Hear him reflect on the orthodox doctrine of the Trinity, that God is to be worshipped as three distinct persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. For centuries, those who challenged this idea had met with persecution, exile, imprisonment, torture, and even death. But the game had changed in this new nation, and the growing Unitarian movement was actively challenging the orthodox view. Jefferson reflected that the hocus-pocus phantasm of a God with one body and three heads had its birth and growth in the blood of thousands and thousands of martyrs, and a strong proof of the solidity of the primitive faith, meaning one God without elaboration into three parts, is its restoration as soon as a nation arises which vindicates to itself the freedom of religious opinion and its external divorce from civil authority. So far, that's what you would expect from the author of the 1786 Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom, which became a model for our Constitution's First Amendment. But now, in 1822, he adds that the pure and simple unity of the Creator of the universe is now all but ascendant in the eastern states. It's dawning in the west and advancing towards the south, and I confidently expect that the present generation will see Unitarianism become the general religion of the United States. Not because it was enforced, but because it was convincing, right? Well, later that year, he added in a letter to a friend, I rejoice that in this blessed country of free inquiry and belief, which has surrendered its conscience to neither kings nor priests, the genuine doctrine of only one God is reviving, and I trust that there is not a young man now living in the United States who will not die a Unitarian. Wow. And I trust that he would use more inclusive language if he were speaking today. But I wonder what he would identify as the great ideas or teachings of our time that will pull us all together as one. I don't think that affirming God as one in one instead of one in three still captures people's imaginations like it used to. The freedom to think or speak about God in any way you want to still holds the interest of many, especially those who live in parts of the country or the world where such freedom is not yet fully enjoyed. But what's our religious good news that's worth sharing on the streets, door to door, or anywhere we go? Like I've done several times before, I invite you now to look at the back of your order of service. There's a fine print on the back. Got to read that fine print. Usually I ask you to read something there silently to yourself, but today I'd like to do something different. I'll start by reading the introduction to those seven principles that you see at the top of the page, and then I'd like one volunteer to read the first principle, another to read the second, and so on. Then we'll do the same for the sources, and I'll do the blessing at the end. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Willing? Okay, let's start. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote
the inherent worth and dignity.
It's okay. We don't have to be too organized. The inherent?
The inherent worth and dignity of every person.
Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations.
A free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
We almost had it in stereo.
The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large.
The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part.
Thank you. The living tradition which we share draws from many sources. Got to take a deep breath for these.
Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life.
Thank you. Another deep breath.
Words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love.
Wisdom from the world through religion which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life.
Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves.
Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit.
Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
Now there's the kind of blessing statement. Grateful for the religious pluralism which enriches and ennobles our faith, we are inspired to deepen our understanding and expand our vision. As free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. I mean, Jefferson could have almost written that, these long sentences. But let's back up a little bit. We've just promised each other our mutual trust and support. But does this mean that I have to value the spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions as much as you do?
No.
How about Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves, also known as the Bible source?
No.
How about direct experience of transcendent mystery and wonder when maybe that whole mystical thing has never done much for me? No problem, right? As long as we treat each other with respect, understanding that different flavors of religious experience are like different kinds of food and music. You like tofu and spinach and fruit. I like barbecue and chocolate, though I'm sympathetic to the idea of fresh fruit and fiber. I like rock. You like opera. Wagnerian opera, for God's sake. But seriously, though, this should not interfere with our sitting or celebrating together. We'll work something out with the food. We always do. But what about those principles? Is it really okay with you that someone should not respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person? Not affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relations? Not support a free and responsible search for truth and meaning? And so on down the list? Are you content for anyone to actively oppose or work against them? I'm not asking if you would go to war or even door to door to change folks' minds or their behavior, but would you be content? Wouldn't you try to do something to get through to them? Are these principles really negotiable? That's something we've got to think about. Are they really negotiable? I think we really think they're for everyone. Not just right here, right now, but everywhere, forevermore. I know that I do, I only realized this quite recently. And I know that that might seem silly, especially given what I do for a living, but there you go. I suppose that this makes me much less different from those door-to-door knockers than I used to think that I was. Those principles are a vision of the world I want to live in, painted in seven broad strokes. The world that I want, not just for me, but for everybody. I'll be waiting, praying, talking, singing, voting, and breathing it into being to the best of my ability. Won't you? Won't you? If this all means something to you, if it means something to you, you want to get it out there, right? Just like Mole does with his music. That's what a mission means. Doing what you can to bring a vision forward. Got a marimba? We'll take a moment. That's what a mission means. Doing what you can to bring a vision forward. Did you know that our religious association, including our congregation, because we're part of that association, has announced its mission to the world? It's right there in the front of your hymnal, right after the preface on a page that's all its own. Take a peek there if you've got your hymnal handy. You'll find a page with just a little single short paragraph on it. That one. Yeah, there's no number on the page. That little paragraph. Our neighbor, Bill Sinkford, the minister of the downtown church and the past president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, once asked a big group of ministers if we had spent much time reading the purposes of the UUA. Not the principles or the sources, he said. The purposes. I felt my face getting red, like I just found myself standing naked on a doorstep. I'd seen the words, of course, but I'd never heard them spoken. I never heard them spoken aloud. And that can make a big difference, and that's what Sinkford did. He read the first paragraph. The Unitarian Universalist Association shall devote its resources to and exercise its corporate powers for religious, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Sounds innocuous. The primary purpose of the association is to serve the needs of its member congregations, organize new congregations, extend and strengthen Unitarian Universalist institutions, no surprise, and implement its principles. Did you hear that? Implement its principles. Implement them. Not go to war or even go door to door necessarily, but not just sit back and enjoy the vision like a movie, to be entertained or even moved by its beauty. We respond to the vision by waiting, praying, talking, singing, voting, and breathing it into being. We don't just do it alone. We form conspiracies to make it so, this lovely vision that we see. Do you know what it means to conspire? It means to breathe together, to breathe together. So a good congregation conspires to carry out its mission. Now, if we want to get religious missionaries off our doorsteps, I've shared this suggestion. Pick an often repeated word in the vocabulary, God, Jesus, heaven, it, the, etc., and giggle whenever they utter it. Or instead of giggling, say beep at every cue word. Though if we're going to dish it out, we better also be able to take it. Except that our principles and sources don't use the word it even once. It's the longest document I've ever seen in my life without the word it in it. Same for Jesus in heaven. No Jesus or heaven. They do use the word the 20 times. I don't hear any beeps or giggles. And of 19 times, but those are really silly choices. Look, if you look at them, there's only one God. There's only one God. Hallelujah. Did I just say that? Well, that was the central Unitarian teaching in Jefferson's time, though now the word one is used just twice. The same is for compassion. Justice comes three times. So does teaching. But after these, what will get us the most beeps and giggles? Any guesses?
We?
How about we times five? Or us times seven? Ooh, seven principles and seven us's. Seven. How about that? You think that was an accident? All that we and us talk? Or maybe a conspiracy? Do you think that you could do it all on your own? Did you think that? Do you want to be part of that conspiracy and help to move it forward? Do you want to?
Yeah.
Well, if so, feel free to giggle. Beep.
Thank you.